before you joined the war, what are you doing?
Oh, I was full of high school.
Yeah.
And I was wondering what I was going to do when I got out of high school. And I was wondering what kind of job am I going to get to? There weren't that many jobs. And one of the things I did during the military, high school, was I run. And I thought, well, in those days, you had to get a fire in San Diego because of the union thing. It would be like, the fire died and the sun takes over or something like that. You know, it's got to be a fire, it's got to be a relative again. And I knew one guy who ran the picture, ran the movie theater, motion picture at the Christmas theater in Philadelphia. I had a good idea, but then come Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, that changed my life forever. You know, I didn't have to worry about a job for the next 4 years. After I graduated in 1942, I was instructed to be an electronics teacher for classes for civil service. And there was kids in that class who went with them to school. We had just about 2 months when they sent us to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to work on radio transmitters, and we're converting what they call crystal control, which is control one frequency. A crystal control transmitter is control what's called coupled oscillators, which means that you can vary the frequency of the transmitter instead of being a high frequency that's going on. We'll grab all the film. And of course, that's where I first found my first B-17 and the Lake Patterson Air Force Base of B-17 is a bomber. We used it in World War II. And I was sad thing. I thought, oh man, I like to be on those. And I already knew radio code real well because I was radio hand. You know, I had my radio license. So I joined the Air Force in October of 42. And I took, there's so many people there. He sworn in Cincinnati, Kentucky, that it took about 2 weeks to get sworn in because there's so many people. I think it was around the beginning of November I finally got sworn in. And I wanted to be a radio operator on a B-17. And that's what sort of got me the basic training in Central California. And I got to get a drink of water here.
Go ahead. What do you want to say? I'm lucky. I'm the American general. Do they like you on time to enter the war?
Do they want to enter the war?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, because it was the call, you know, everybody's up on a very patriotic, you know. And the old one, you know, they were all patriotic. They all wanted to go. And the fans said, I want you to make people want to be losing the cause and be losing freedom. I mean, do what they want, like now, you know.
Did you see any advertisements so that you went?
I when I was at Lake Patterson Air Force Base, I saw B-17. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get an airport. I wanted to find that big airplane, you know. So I did, you know. And I went to Fort Thomas. Kentucky, I sworn in, and they sent me to California for basic training, you know, marching, all that stuff, you know. There wasn't enough rifles in these days, so we didn't have rifles or sticks to do it. You know, practice it. We just drilled. And finally, after about 3 or 4, well, maybe 5 or 6 weeks of that stuff. Then I went back to Axfield, Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, to go to radio operator school. And I graduated from that. And I was probably first class when I was there. And I was turned away. And so that's where I first learned about the aviation career. One night just before about a month before I was ready to graduate from cadet from radio school, two, 3 years coming one evening. Because the first time I was there, I was there, maybe 25 guys on the street on each side, you know. There was like 50 people in a row. 25 on each side, but there was a big long room like this, you know. Called the Barrett, U-R-A-K-S-P-S-P-S. And they threw these names on the top. I was going, gee, what are those things? You know, there's silver, there was golden rings. I looked up. The fellow next to me, he was from Natural Tennessee. He said, there's a workshop today. And I said, well, what's the workshop today? So he told me, well, everything today, they didn't make the rings. The workshop, they were so proud to have their rings and all the other channels, you know. So I said, how did you become an aviation cadet? He said, actually, what did I get 2 years of recommendation? Take the physical and pass the written oral, or written exam. So, much later, I was a cadet. But he flunked, he flunked it twice before and flunked it again. So anyway, then from there we went to, I went to Semina, Tennessee, it's regular name, it's national, but they call it classification. Find out whether you're going to be a pilot, bomber, or an aviator. Well, when I got there, I passed the test. You know, I was going to join me. How can I find an airplane? I don't even know how to drive a car. I'm 18 years old. I don't know how to drive one. But in those days, I hardly ever sat in a car, let alone, you know, we're talking about early, late 30s and 40s, you know. If I probably sat in an automobile maybe 2 dozen times, that's all. So I rode the bus a lot, so I don't know what I said, but I'd be able to sit in an automobile. But an airplane, if I don't know how to drive a car, I was pointing it out. So one day they asked the volunteers for volunteers, I raised my hand. Yeah, so this was going to pick me up to school. I raised my hand because I was afraid to fly an airplane. I said, I couldn't do that because the car. So anyway, I became a pilot there. So, we sent up to Santa Ana, California then for pre-flight school or something. We took a lot of, engineer, gunner, top gunner, and a ball pro gunner, 12 runners, you know, like 5 by 5 runners, there's 10 people on a crew. And then there were 4 actors. There are the co-pilot, the navigator, and the bomber. They were all actors, you know, just one of them. And at that time, I was made a photo officer. The other guys on my crew were second turn. They were one rank ahead of me. But eventually, when I went overseas, I made 50 turns just like the rest of them. You know, I got second turn, my 50 turn. We trained in Muroc, California, bombing. And we also
after you graduate, the American Manual of Advocacy.
They what?
I mean, when you graduate, the American, that becomes the Randy Wall, right?
Oh, yeah, they were in the war since December 1st, December 1941.
1941?
Yeah, this is December 7th, 1941. In December 8th, 1941, President Roosevelt came on the radio and talked about the infamy of the Japanese bombing at Pearl Harbor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I was sitting in the auditorium in Cedar High School when he gave his talk. And anyway, at that time, little did I know I was going to be a bombardier in the service, you know. I figured I'd be in the service eventually, but at that time I was only 17 years old and was bombed like 18 in April, the following April. Question. That's that year I joined the service. Mm-hmm. At the end of the month, once before.
What is your first operation? What is your first operation? Your first mission?
We went to in October 1944. Well, I'll tell you a problem. I was in Burma. I was facing India.
Mm-hmm.
We bombed in Burma between Siam and North Thailand. And there's a railroad. Went from Bangkok to Rangoon. And it's a plane. They call it the death railroad because there were so many Americans and Australians and English people working on that thing. The guy that dies, you know. There's even a little book or two on that, called Death Railroad. And then there was even a movie called The Did the River Fly. And I had bombed that once. I didn't know what the funny was. The word, they just said, there was the bridges at San Canterbury. I would have known it. But I didn't know that River Fly. If it's at San Canterbury, Siam, I would have known where I was at. I said, I just bombed the bridge in the one. Anyway, 20 years later, my navigator tells me about thinking about this little fly. Yeah, we were there, I guess. I go to St. Canterbury, you know. Anyway, my first mission. We had a small war there. I mean, we sent out 5 or 6 airplanes out of a squadron. We flew long missions. I mean, we flew from the shortest flying time would be 8 hours, and we fly for 17 hours round trip. You know, like going to Vancouver, we went from Canada to India before we were based, and we started bombing. We go all the way like to, say, Bangkok. That'd be like 17 hours round trip. We bombed the third base at Bangkok and go all the way back home. And we used to go there without quite a rest for it. Well, because the fighter planes that time could not fly far because there was no belly tank to hold the gasoline, you know, over there. But if we could have them. That's why the first mission was like, it was October 22nd, 1944, when the monsoon season stopped. You heard the monsoon, heavy rain, hard rain, monsoon. We were a lot of Canadians in the south of the suburbs. And that and stuff. They weren't getting hit by. The car was still really bad for them. Yeah, we started bombing about our school. We can bomb to about from our school to about me, and then when the weather's so bad, you can't leave mine. Because the clouds are so high and there's so much rain. Anyway, get back to the first meeting. And then we had another squadron with us. And we went with some 5 or 6 in this squadron, to the ninth squadron. And I was at 4:32. 4:36. After the 493rd bomb squadron, 7th bomb group, 10th Air Force, that's where I was at. Sitting in the 493rd. And we were, but we specialized. Well, not at that time, not until December of 45th. So we went, they told us to go down to Dock and Getty. We went there without further extra. We were up there to throw bombs, and they told us to make a real hard turn. So we went with the air base up just a bit north of it, so there was quite a steady aircraft there. Just turn real hard and come back to the up my bomb good fast. And there was a crowd of stress. So if we got the bomb, it was 12 officers, Japanese aircraft, and they attacked us, and they shot down 3 of the 5 our planes in our squadron. Wow. And me and another, our plane and another plane, the only 2 come back to life. All the rest of the guys went and called the martyr bandit. Japanese shot them down. And the other squadron didn't get touched. But they would say high kill, the other squadron high kill, and they left two of us, and they left alone for another half hour, and they shot at us for a total of 35 minutes for the whole thing, for the next half hour. They shot down the first 3 planes in 45 minutes, and for 30 more minutes, they attacked us after our 2 planes. And then, after I got down, he goes back, yeah, I figured I got these 29 more of these, I'm never going to make it. You know, I'm only 20 years old, I'm never going to see my 25th sister. You know, go ahead. So I didn't think about that before I got, you know, still got back. So I said, yeah, I'm not going to come home. You know, 20 years old, I'm never going to make it to go back to the United States. How can I happen to make 29 more of these things? I said, but they never, after that, it was never that bad. There was a whip when I said, well, maybe I had some other close calls, but nothing like being attacked, you know, but if you have to go after that federal escort. But shortly thereafter, in 251 to 238, I was in the federal escort, it was a plane for federal escort, 251, 247, 248, 238. Well, anyway, the kind of plane we flew was called a C-24 liberator bomb. There was 10 people on a plane. So when the plane got shot down, 10 guys went down. At that time, I was about to down 30. My buddy, including our commanding officer, got shot down.
Did you have anybody just attack the bomb off?
Not that time, no.
Okay, fine.
But not till later did they, because you flew so far, you know.
Oh, yeah, you had $70.
Yeah, well, sometimes 8 to 17 hours, I'd be really. I was always happy when a high ranking officer was going to fly on our mission because I knew it would be a short one and easy one. Not difficult. Because, you know,
oh, yeah, that is a
big blast on it. They didn't want to go in danger, you know. So we'd go down someplace, go down some Japanese troops or something, and go up so bad, too. But,
most of the time you are in the Pacific War.
Yes.
I mean in Asia.
In Asia, all the time in Asia.
In Asia.
Most of the time in Burma and China. Mm-hmm. After 2 months, in December 44, in January 45, I lived in the interior of China in the mountains in the tent. And we very, you know, out of
You can, do you see any Chinese soldiers?
Laughing.
Most of them in the mountains.
Yeah, they did, but they said where we're at. They were guarding our planes. You know, it was so much. The biggest problem we had was when I was there. She was trunk like that. She had one section. Nazi trunk had another, the communist.
Yeah.
The easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were preparing for after the war for the fight coming up. So they would each stay. They would get knock on supplies. They'd say, oh, we don't have any already. Well, what they're doing is they're taking the supplies. They're hiding them in the mountains for after the, when the war was over, so they would fight the communists and the nationalists would fight. So. And of course, the communists eventually won.
Uh-huh.
The communists, the nationalists helped me. We went to Taiwan. And at that time, it was called Formosa.
Yeah.
Now we call it Taiwan. So,
what did you eat during the war?
Mostly, there were an awful lot of rations cooked, you know, food rations. Now the people in China were really, really tough. They had everything they ate was food rations, you know. It was really poor. Mm-hmm. Even the soldiers who were there didn't have a lot to eat. The people in China during World War II, the Japanese had everything blockaded, all the whole coast,
mm-hmm.
and they also took the Burma Road and they blocked that off. So everything in China during World War II was thrown in, had to be thrown in by Israel. And they were very, very strict up there with Chinese people. No. If somebody stole something, they were shot. They were 32. I didn't have to see this, but I saw people go back there, and they were just taken back there because they were fast stealing. And they knee them down behind a big building over there, and then they would shoot them back to him with 32 their own people for stealing. And nobody's stealing them.
Uh-huh.
I try to give a little boy a tin something from, or a tin can from something I heard of. I wanted to hear it. I knew this statement. He wouldn't take it because I gave him a written note like here, so he said it's just a tin cup. Make a little handle on it, maybe you could take the suggestions. And they found where they soldered together.
Uh-huh.
And they took the can and started looking at it, and then they did these drinking tests. So, you can't understand how poor the Chinese people were.
Yeah.
They probably still were. They were probably not in all that they used to be, but it was very, very poor. I can remember one time, there's this little Chinese boy there with a big basket of orange. And he's selling for nickel piece. That brown orange. That was a very little, he has very little textured. In China, I think the orange is still in the region from China anyway. But the orange, and I started eating, man. I was hungry, I liked that thing. See, we just fell from India. I said, what's this I want when I give him a boy? So he was standing a little bit on the side watching me eat that thing. And then I see the peels on his mouth, he grabbed it and he'd eat it. He picked up the heart where they were, you know. And they wanted the money for the thing. But he wanted those orange. Probably the best quarter of orange anyway. But I just can't eat people there. And they just started making the B-29, taking the B-29 to the spawn. They were in fact in China and bombed Japan. And they put a safety for a bomb in Formosa, which is China. And they got to China. They were being stoned out of the mountains in Saipan. Staying up there in China. You can't be 100 people there in China. Oh, you know. And the Chinese, and they would crush these stones and take them up the hill and baskets and whatever. The people would lay them off the ground. Well, let me go run them 10,000 foot long. Because you see where they're on the mountains. And those things need more runways to take off because the altitude, you know, is up here. So, the Japanese, or the Japanese, the Chinese people, they made rollers out of a paper cut, they made straw rollers. There'd be maybe 200 people pulling wizards and rollers to flatten off the stones so the C-29 could come in there and take off the little bomb. Japan and the mission. But we had a plenty of supplies and a gold bomb. The gold bomb foremost for a
fight through all the time.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, no, everybody in the home maybe I'd be in there, you know. Maybe only one of them would live. No, I don't think that everybody's the only one to live there, you know. Either. But I lost a lot of friends there, you know. I lost a lot of my friends that died there. Young John Taylor from Detroit. He was a volunteer like me. And he and I was there. 2 weeks before he got done over to the university, he got married. And he was, let's see, I was 20, he had been 21, 22 maybe, a little bit older than I was. And he was in Detroit. The first was going to school, she was a senior, and I like a ladies' school. Because I thought she was very good at throwing out, but if she was quiet. So anyway, we got married, and we were married for 2 weeks, and he had to go to work, maybe go to California, to training and go to school. Anyway, she got killed by her own aircraft in China. And she's 61, they call her Black Widow. We used to fly from Luoyang, China, to Sichuan, near the base. Planes were flying in, just the guys for Sichuan. And the Japanese had just raided the base, bombed the airstrip, you know. There's a P-61 fighter up there, a couple of them later. But anyway, he started coming in from Luoyang, and the P-51 pilot spotted him on the radar. The radar, that was a request for him up there. But it was, radar requested, even though it was new. And, he called a tower, I guess, and the tower says, our 15 plane up in the sky here, you know. So we shot him. He said, you know, shot him down. We just shot him one time. He knocked out the two-up engine. Mm-hmm. And the reason we know this is for the navigator bailed out. And the waste gunner bailed out. The waste gunner got pulled through his leg. And then the plane crashed in the mountains. All three of them died, but the people bailed out. And you shut down. And you bail out. If you get to ground, you run for 15 minutes. And that Chinese, pretty fast, but you got to remember, Chinese, pretty big place. The Japanese just had the railroads and from the main road and the whole place. But they said if you could run for 15 minutes from the time you landed, the Chinese would take you to find it. We did. And then the navigator would be allowed, and then the police went in. I don't know how easy it was, but they just standing, picked them up, and 2 days later they were back at our camp. Because they never ate, they ate a lot of eggs and stuff like that. All the time, all the meals. And so that's that. But then, it's a big incentive to bring somebody back, because they got $10,000 for every fire they brought back. So they kind of was a warlord. Group problems, can't, they have different dialects, you know, and they can't even tell each other. They can't understand each other. Anyway, but you have to used to wear whole things, on your back, on the side of your jacket. You know, tell you if you brought your back, give you $10,000, just like a big antenna. Mm-hmm. So they would bring you back. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't care, probably. So, I guess so. I really don't know. I do. It's feelings there. Yeah, I guess I do. But that's propaganda, you know.
Did you see a weird Japanese guy?
No. I was on mostly bridges. I specialize in bridges. We had a dream in December of 1944. They deal with the new, well, they actually came over earlier, about September of 44, they came with a new bomb. They tried it over to Italy, and they couldn't use it in Italy because in Italy, there's so much flak in any aircraft there, that you could not take a straight run on a target more than 30 seconds. It was more than 30 seconds, the radar did some keep the gun, so that's pretty fast, big pattern. But over the rear act, you could do that. You could fly longer, sometimes longer.
Yeah.
And so they got that bomber, and they trained us. We got the radio control bomb called Avion, A-V-O-N. And you can control it like this, from 11,000 feet or under. And, so we were flipping on bridges because we wanted to interdict that railroad coming from Bangkok to Rangoon. Because that was the lifeblood of the Japanese to find the soldiers and blow it. Because the sea was pretty well mined and they couldn't bring too many ships up around to Rangoon, you know. So anyway, we used to bomb that hopefully. And just for that reason, bombing was good for that. Because there was not a lot of any aircraft there, some of the targets, you know. And,
letter from the, when you were in the army, could you get a letter from your friends or at home?
Mm-hmm. So they call it, what do they call it? Email.
The email.
And they would take the mail and they would photograph it and reduce it in size, you know.
Oh.
You know, if you got a letter like this and they would photograph it, make it that big and they would have to send it to you.
Uh-huh.
But there was some, there was like, you see, I don't know too much about what's in the States because, like, one of your questions is, how'd you know what was happening in the war with these all this stuff? Well, I was at home for 5 days and over 3.5 years, you know. When I graduated from the FBI, 5 days off, that was the first time I'd been home in almost 3.5 years, you know.
Yeah.
And the people say, oh, what we talked about this, these stamps they got here to have, you know, to the street. I didn't know anything about that stuff, you know. Because I had been going all the time. I had been in the military. I didn't know anything about the way in those years.
I see.
So,
unforgettable. Which mission is unforgettable?
This is my last one.
Last one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in May. I just got ready to go home.
Mm-hmm. You know the war is bad.
Well,
it's going to end.
Yeah, well, it's getting good, you know. Mm-hmm. They're coming down south of Burma, you know.
Uh-huh.
But Europe was almost over. War in Europe was not quite over yet, because, you know, that was in June, I think, it was, Friday it ended in about August. Anyway, we're going to... Rangoon's kind of up the river from the sea, and the British want to invade Rangoon just in May, about 3rd or 4th of May. And our job was to knock out the heavy anti-aircraft fire guarding the river. The British fleet come up the river to take and invade Rangoon. They put us to bomb from 11,000 feet. So they have to cut it. If there's a lot of cloud cover, go beneath the cloud cover. So what happened? Typical army stuff, everybody's chewed up. Yeah. Some guys down from 7,000 feet to 28,000 feet to 8,000 feet. And with a crash, which from 11,000 feet, you want a few holes in the clouds, you know, to see, find a target. And you want to move the clouds to bounce. And we did. So you had to change all your settings and everything, you know, on the bomb site. And, you know, some feet up there. Well, if you were going to bounce on the target, help them. Win. I look at this bombing. I leave it. It's just our planes. I like it. My own people. It's just bombing. You know, the bombs are coming down. They're bombing from 11,000. They're bombing here. There's clouds to be seen. So we almost got our planes hit by our own aircraft on our last mission. And one of the guys in my own squadron, he mixed, he don't see, we don't put the settings on the bomb site, you know, didn't do great. Being just at the goal, there was a bunch of Indian drifters there. You know, because they were going to go forward after the bombing. Well, one of our bombardiers miscalculated, put the wrong set of information in the bomb site. Then, the bomb fell way short, and he killed more drifters there than the Japanese could push. But what really happened is the Japanese were only going to the game. Somebody rolled on top of, you know, prisoner war camp and ran down, gone, you know, on top. And, unfortunately, I just killed he bombed the river guards and still like, this 14, 15 of them. I imagine he got court-martialed, so that, you know, oh, yeah, it's weird. He didn't need to do it or something. But he was so, you know, you forget things in the excitement of a battle, you know. I had to think of every little thing. Once you had UFO, you know, we had movies and stage movies. They had gymnasiums, the gyms, a place to play basketball and stuff. And I was only 18, 19 years old, you know. So if I could have a movie place in a library and gymnasium to play basketball, I was happy to work, you know. It was good for me, you know. I really enjoyed that. I was much younger at that time, much running around, people in the room, you know.
You came back to the United States. What changed in this week?
I don't know. But you know, I was talking about coming back. I had to come back on a ship from China or from India. And it took us 62 days to come home on a ship, and it was a long time. From Allen to the Pacific, I think, you know, coming home, matter of fact. Up in India, we went to Australia, the Philippines, and New Guinea, and places like that, and Okinawa. We were halfway out of Okinawa when the war ended. The Japanese surrendered in 1945. It was half a day out of the ship travel, half a day away from Okinawa. And I didn't threaten it. I'm saying, well, these Japanese would use kamikaze planes, you know, and they would human people in an aircraft and would guide this, you know, kamikaze in Manitoba. They had aircraft with bombs in them, and they would just die and just kill themselves, you know. And it was dedicated to die. So they were buried to die. Maybe God or something, I don't know what it was. But I was putting it out, and I was so happy the war was over, because I thought it was pretty worse than that. In that harbor, and all these crazy fires, you know, and all that stuff. I survived my time overseas, you know. I sure wouldn't want to be shot down. I gave him a ship by some dumb jet, you know, down with heavy plane, you know. So when I come back, I don't know. I just got out of high school, you know. I mean, when you go to high school, you're not living in the real world yet, you know. Because before I was I went to service, I was going to high school. I got a job for 25 cents an hour, winding armatures, and some guys, armatures are in a motor, electric motors, you know, to kind of rotate, and propel the magnets and make them turn, you know, and the wires on those things. I learned how to do that from some of the old guys. Really poor people, when I first went in there, and Air Force, all the guys are mowing up the food. And I was happy as Mark. I got paid for food. Because at home, my mother was, my father was very ambitious. He drank a lot, you know. Remember one time, in Cleveland, a mayor called Thatcher. And how do you ever bread and milk in my house? Well, I found out about you bread, free bread and milk. I told my mother, Mom, I know how to get free bread and milk. I couldn't believe it. So I got these tickets and I had everything. But every so often I'll get the bread and milk for you. And they were giving out free. My mother never knew that. I found out about it. Well, anyway, that's those days they flag it kind of kicked out and hard to hold. People don't have any money. My poor boys, you know, can't get education or anything like that. I don't think anybody's been scared of me, you know. None of us went to jail and sold things and things like that. You don't have to. It's going to work, you know.
Yeah. Well, when you went to the Army, did your parents get paid? Your family?
No. I spent my mother's money. I went there as a private. I made $50 a month. Mm. And I could send my mother. But I didn't do anything, you know. I spent her $25 a month every month. And then, I remember when I was overseas, I was making $156 and $57, $57 a month for combat pay and everything. I was 50 cents a month. And $100 every month on that pay. And I heard she needed it. I don't know if it was how much she needed it, you know. Because my father wasn't much, you know. That's why I came back. I loved California. And if I didn't have the mother that I had, I loved my mother dearly. And if I didn't have the mother that I had, I would get out in California and work and live there. I would get out there. But because the mother I had, I wanted to be my mother, and I helped her all her life. My father died at 55, we were young. He drank himself, and he had lung cancer, and he smoked a lot. At age 55 years old, my mother was, I was married in about 3 or 4 years, and I was the oldest man, a young kid, I helped Riley remodel the house and everything else for it.
So you helped your father on this trip?
Oh yeah.
All the time.
Uh-huh. That too. But my brothers and sisters all...
Did they get education?
Yeah. No, not college. I don't know what he did. My brother, I have another brother, he got a 4-year degree like I did. Mm-hmm. I was the first one in the family to get a 4-year degree. And my other brother, he got one. But my mother's got for a couple of years. You know. In those days, there was no 2-year college, no community college. There would have been. They would have probably all had one. But they all had a couple of years of college.
So you, after you left China, did they start the Civil War already?
No.
Not yet?
No. Yeah, I was gone. They didn't start the Civil War until probably November of 46, something like that. But the rivalry was already there, you know.
But the American already left.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they left.
the American Club. I was only in China in December of 44 and in January of 45. After that, I came back to India to come back to more bombing or Burma and China, you know. I was Burma and Siam. That's what I did. But maybe I was all done bombing and I had my time and they were getting a lot of crews letting, you know. All the time.
Really India.
Oh yeah, lots of. We lived right among them. You know.
But you cannot communicate with them.
Oh, they could speak English.
They speak English.
Most of them could speak English.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of them could speak English. Well, the ones who worked around the camp could speak English, okay? But maybe hired kids. You call them bears. B-E-A-R-E-R. Bear.
Mm-hmm.
They would make our bed and there'd be like four of us, you know, we would hunt. And we would hire Indian person and he'd make like a hunt, take care of four of us. He'd take our clothes, laundry, you know, get their beds and dry our shoes and whatever, you know, clean our room.
Could we walk
back to Oh, yeah, man. You wouldn't want to be married and get married. You know. I didn't even have a girlfriend. So I got out and I met my wife. We were married 50 years last October. When I came home, you know, there was hardly any room, you know, in the house. I had to get out. So I thought, I'm not being married. And we just, you know.
In a radio company?
No, I,
outside of war.
After the war, I was a DuPont.
DuPont.
In a laboratory for about 3 years. I was training for me.
Oh.
Then I worked. God, the first 5 years I was out, I was pretty tough to get, you know, get adjusted. I worked about three years at DuPont. I mean, it's supposed to be in the office, you know. So,
Sponsor thing, maybe?
No, it was putting out money. It'd be
accounting,
but then there was no money. I had a good title, no money. Then I decided to sit down. So then I went to Ohio Bill. I stayed with Ohio Bill for 30 years and I quit. I quit work. I retired when I was 57 years old. I had 30 years old.
How did you feel difficult to adapt to after the war? I mean, why did you feel?
Well, I don't know, because I lived such a different life, you know, for almost 4 years. Basically, you know, like into the real world. And that wasn't the real world. Being in the army was not being like being in the real world, but somebody's looking out for you. Somebody's giving you something to eat or something, you know, but you're taking care of them. So I had been taking care of all my life, you know, high school, army, technically, you know. And when you get out, you're on your own. You know, you gotta make your own buck, you gotta pay your own insurance, you gotta buy your own food, you know. And that was different, I guess. And
did you see any movement in the army at that time?
I was very few. Yeah, they were lax at that time, you know, but where I was at, I saw very few women, except the native women.
How do you feel about the war?
Huh?
After the war, how do you feel? I mean, when you look back?
We
still joined the army.
I stayed in reserve. I was in the reserve after the war. Before leaving the country, I love America, okay. Besides, the United States Air Force, I investigated for top secret to the current for 18 years and active in reserve duty for 18 years a while ago, okay. So, got my time right. I made 20 good years, and I spent 18 years seeing people's background, and things to do with the Air Force. Security in the United States Air Force. That's where I learned about people. You know, when I was in the military, I didn't
feel it deep. I'm going to tell you about it. When I got into the OSI, I was a special agent. I had a gun and I had a badge with credentials in it. I was a federal kind of monk. I recruited down there and worked with the regular agents. And then two, 3 weeks a year, I was working there. So it was mostly, I'd say 90% of what I did was background investigations on people. And that's where I learned all about people. A lot of people. I don't know that I know all about them.
You really like the job.
I learned a lot about people. I can talk to a person. Maybe I'm wrong, but a giant, if I hear the first six words from a person, I size them up right away. Maybe you do too, I don't know. I put that down in a category. If I don't, the first thing I look for in a person is humility. They don't have humility. I know they're not. I don't know what to say, but humility is kind of, you're humble, you know, you're not a walker or whatever you are. Doesn't mean they're all bad, but I do that right away. First thing I look for.
When you're doing some background research, do you find comedy?
No.
No.
But people with the job because of me, you know, because they lie. I was looking at all his background. He lied all the way through me. So, you know, it's too heavy. You gotta be sophisticated.
How do you do this? How do you research the background? You do them?
Yeah, every person goes a little back and interview.
Why?
We want to know exactly what they say is true.
But it's for the military.
For the military, almost, yeah. Or working on secret stuff for the United States government. United States Air Force in a factory. Somebody who's doing secret work in the Air Force.
They are normal civilians.
Yes, so they're doing it. But they're working for the United States government in a factory that's doing secret work.
I see. So you have to make sure
the people in there are okay. Do the best you can. You don't get them all, you know. I learned a lot about people. Yeah.
So you continue your job after the war?
I worked for Hal Bell when I was coming up to this.
Continue your military.
I'm still in the military. I'm 73 years old. I could be recalled tomorrow, you know. But they're going to be taking women and children versus taking an old man like me. when I came back, I feel like this. See how naive I was about the war. You know, I had been gone for over 3.5 years. I knew nothing. I didn't know there was any cars. I was in the back. I wanted to cry. I learned to drive. Just one thing I tell you about learning how to drive. I didn't know how to drive, remember?
No, you don't know.
Okay, so but in 19, when I got overseas, June, I became officer to do it. It means I was in charge of the camp for waking people up to go on a mission or to dress and duty all night long, things like that. We call it officer to do it. But they were supposed to ride around in the Jeep. I didn't know how to drive a car. So we're in Dhaka. That's the name of Dhaka, India. No, Dhaka. Another country now.
Has big or automatic?
No automatic. The start from like 46, 47. The automatic gears came out the first time I had a waist gunner. Fred Gears, he was from Hoffman, State Gun Meyer. That waist gunner, he's 3 or 4 years older than me. We got our weapons carrier, and he taught me how to drive. I learned how to drive in about a half hour.
About this generation of America.
Cisco, I know some really good ones, some really bad ones. The biggest problem is drugs. Really, illegal drugs, you know. That's why there's so much crime. You get the habit. I think the drugs are tobacco and alcohol. I don't drink the smoke, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's because of my father. I don't want to be like him. See. But to me, I'm smoking. It's just like taking dope, you know. It's hard to get away from it.
I never tried, but I don't know.
Yeah. I never did either, but you can't get away from it. I see women smoking with their children and carrying their arms. The dope habit, they just can't give it up, you know. Probably not that they don't beg their children, but they just can't get over their dumb habit. I don't have any for it. No, but I have all my brothers and sisters, all my brothers here. I have my brother and sister call her Bucky too. I have lots of nieces and nephews. I have probably like nieces and nephews and all that. I probably have 67 brothers. And a large family away from them.
That's
how? Oh, yes, yeah.
I mean, only both of you.
Yeah. I was actually retired too. I'm 73, almost 73. I'll be 17 next year, 70.
What were you doing? You used your novel. What were you doing dating?
We did a lot of genealogy, worked around the house, we traveled. I have lots of hobbies, little cheap, you know, crafts and tools and a lot of libraries and stuff, researching ancestors. We have like little pamphlets we have written on different things. We copied records for people. I was the president of the North Carolina Human Rights Society for 9 years and I was the treasurer. We copied all the marriage records from 1818 to 1994. My society's not up to long. It took about a big year to do that. And I was a lot of copying of things. And our society is copying the death records. Right now we're in 53. I started that when I was the president of society. We're doing it. It's making it easier for people to find it. Lake City and January for a couple of weeks. And the library up there. Mormons have the library.